From Capital Public Radio in Sacramento, this is Insight. I'm Randall White in for Beth Ruyak. Thousands of Central American migrants are in the Mexican border city of Tijuana, just south of San Diego, hoping to cross into the United States. On Sunday, a group of several hundred tried to do just that. The U.S. Border Patrol used tear gas to control the situation. Reaction to this move varies depending on who you ask. Supporters of President Donald Trump's crackdown on immigration point to Sunday's confrontation as proof of an invasion. While critics of this policy question the legality of the methods used by border agents. Joining us now is PolitiFact reporter Chris Nichols to help us sort through what is really a complicated set of circumstances. As always, Chris, it's really great to have you here.
Good morning, Randall. Great to be here.
So let's back up a little bit for everyone and paint the scene of what's taken place over the past month or so with these migrants.
Well, just to set the stage a bit, we have more than 5,000 migrants essentially camped out in Tijuana, just south of San Diego. And roughly half are from this group that the president and the news media has been sort of tracking over recent weeks that has moved up through Mexico from Honduras up to the southern border. But the other half has essentially been in Tijuana, has been camped out from other groups of migrants that have come and hope to seek asylum into the United States. But the wait times are really long. There's a limited amount of processing going on at the border. The federal government has said that it can only process up to, at the most, 100 asylum claims per day there at the San Ysidro port of entry. And in reality, it's been maybe a few dozen at times per day. So there's really a backlog. There's been a lot of frustrations on the part of the migrants, on the part of the city of Tijuana as to how to deal with thousands of people camped out now at a sports stadium there.
Yeah, the mayor was even calling for a humanitarian crisis at one point.
That's right. Issues of sanitation, food, how to pay for this, and just the human story there in this border city. And so really, it's sort of a mix of what everybody has been watching in recent weeks and a problem that already existed.
One reason there was such a focus on that main caravan coming up is because it was in the days and weeks prior to the election. And so it was being used by both sides.
It was a huge focus of President Trump as, something that he talked almost daily about leading up to the midterm elections as a concern, as reason to send the military to the border. So, yes, it was a big focus.
Now, Chris, you grew up in San Diego. You're very familiar with the San Ysidro land crossing. It's the busiest in the Western Hemisphere.
That's right. Not just the busiest land border crossing in the United States, but in the Western Hemisphere. There are 90,000 people pass north through this crossing each day, 70,000 in cars, 20,000 by foot. These are people who come to the United States to work, to go to school, to shop. It's a normal part of the region. It's a gateway between Tijuana, a large city in itself, and San Diego. It's a huge economic engine for the region. Businesses there rely on these shoppers, these people to come work for them. And right now, from the best I can gather, there's a lot of uncertainty and concern, given what happened over the weekend, the protest, the rushing of the border, the use of tear gas, as to whether, and then the temporary closure for a few hours of the port of entry, as to whether, people can get back and forth easily. It's already a difficult situation with a lot of traffic, but now I think there's an added concern.
Yeah, that is a lot of traffic. I mean, it's not quite at the volume of the Golden Gate Bridge, but it's close. So imagine that being shut off. And it was shut off for about 4 hours on Sunday.
That's right. Temporarily, over concerns about migrants gathering nearby, and certainly led to this flashpoint that I think we're going to talk a little bit about with the tear gas and the legality.
Yeah. And so a protest developed because of the backlog.
That's right. My understanding is that given these long wait times, given the weeks and potentially months that migrants could have to wait just to apply, to legally apply for asylum at this port of entry. Many were frustrated. They protested over the weekend. And then a group of them did rush up to a border fence, tried to scale it. That's when the and also reportedly were throwing rocks at the Border Patrol. That's
we're
when
talking
the,
about a few hundred.
That's right. That's right. And that's when the U.S. Border Patrol agents fired tear gas at these migrants seeking to enter the southwest border.
And that seems to be a point that even at least one member of Congress has questioned the legality of. And what is the legality of using tear gas in a situation like this?
Well, yes, PolitiFact, our national partner, they wrote an article about this. They saw a tweet from Hawaii Senator Brian Schatz, who asked simply, is this legal? He asked, is it moral? Is it accurate? What's happening here? So I think that was really what sparked the curiosity on PolitiFact's part. What they did is they looked at the statements from the Border Patrol. They said that the Border Patrol said their agents were being assaulted. The head of the Border Patrol said a large group rushed the area, were throwing rocks and bottles at my men and women, putting them in harm's way, and that the response was necessary to disperse them from the area. You have other federal officials who have talked about past use of chemicals, including pepper spray, as a deterrent at the border. And then PolitiFact did reach an immigration policy expert at the Cato Institute, who said that the Border Patrol agents have indeed fired tear gas on the border before, and that there does not appear to be any law against it. But I think he also really got to the heart of this matter and the bigger picture of whether this action was necessary, whether it was warranted, which is probably a whole another discussion. But there does not appear to be any law against it. I don't think it's a common practice by any means. But the legality at this point, it does not seem like they broke any laws.
I believe we have some sound from the president on his view.
He was asked directly about this on the White House lawn yesterday.
Are you
They're not, as you know, they're not. They had to use because they were being rushed by some very tough people, and they used tear gas. And here's the bottom line. Nobody's coming into our country unless they come in legally.
And the question there is hard to hear over the sound of the helicopter, and that is, are you comfortable tear gassing women and children?
That's right. And again, the president, as he's said in the past, essentially has described many of these migrants as dangerous, violent people, tough people, and felt that it was justified.
Now, because of all the attention that's been paid to it, some people might be led to believe that this level of border crossing is at a historic high, but that is not true?
Well, my understanding is that the border crossings have actually decreased. I mean, over recent years and decades, the United States has added quite a bit of border security. And certainly during the Great Recession, we saw border crossings drop quite a bit. The added security has made it more difficult. So no, we're not at a period of any sort of historic long-term trend of border crossings. But with the caravans, I think, you know, these moments in time when these groups do come to the border, they are significant, large numbers of people. But as far as the trend goes, we're at a pretty low period.
Does the president have the ability to shut down the San Ysidro crossing if he wants to?
My understanding is that he does. You know, I think just looking at some of the reaction from the region, the San Diego region, and the economic concerns are very large. So I imagine there's some pushback there. But as far as the law goes, my understanding is he can at least temporarily do that, yes.
All right, we're speaking with PolitiFact reporter Chris Nichols about the use of tear gas along the Mexico-U.S. border on Sunday. I want to shift gears now, if we can, Chris, and talk a little bit about In the wake of the devastating campfire, there's been a lot of online talk regarding California Governor Jerry Brown's veto of wildfire legislation. You've reported out a piece for PolitiFact on that.
That's right. For PolitiFact California, our project here at Cap Radio, we published an article a couple weeks ago after these devastating fires. As they were burning, we saw a real flurry of social media and blog posts questioning Governor Brown and his veto from 2 years ago of this wildfire management bill. And it really led us to say what was in that bill, why did he veto it? And essentially that veto and all these blog posts were being used to say, or to at least strongly suggest, that if he had signed it, something could have been done about these fires, or they could have been prevented, or they may not have been quite as bad. So we checked it out. There was a bill that he vetoed, essentially a bill that aimed to reduce the risk of power lines sparking fires in wooded areas, much like the area there in Paradise.
And we should say we don't know yet the official cause of the fire for the Camp Wildfire, but there is speculation that it could be related to PG&E power lines.
Exactly. And certainly power lines have caused other fires around the state, devastating fires. And what we did is we looked at the governor's veto message. He puts out letters to explain when he rejects a law. He said that essentially the bill would have duplicated efforts that were already underway by the state, by CAL FIRE and the Public Utilities Commission, to create fire threat maps, to do the same essential thing, to look for areas that were at the most risk of fire due to overhead power lines. And so, you know, that was sort of glossed over in these blog posts or not mentioned at all. You know, people would sort of share the articles, but really there's no real context there about why the governor did this and the ongoing process. I think there's a debate as to whether the process that was in the works was moving fast enough, and whether this bill, even though it was eventually rejected by the governor, whether that sped up the existing process. I think that's hard to know. We didn't place a rating on this, but what we tried to do was just fill in the picture as to what else was going on at the time.
And the outcome of your reporting is that it's really unclear whether this veto had any effect whatsoever on the fires.
I think it's unclear in the sense that, you know, the bill was not passed, so we don't know what it would have done, if it would have sped things up. The Brown administration says it could have actually slowed down the existing process, and that everything in that bill was already being worked on. We did speak with a forestry expert from UC Berkeley, Bill Stewart. He looked at the bill. He looked at Brown's veto message. He told us he did not think it would have made much of a difference because there was not much money attached to it. But he did go on to say that risk assessment and fire mitigation that has been woefully underfunded for decades, and that this could have been, in his words, a shot across the bow to the Brown administration to do more. So it could have been motivation to keep moving on their existing process.
And finally, Governor Jerry Brown is on his way out, and Governor-elect Gavin Newsom is on his way in. You are working on a big project you plan to roll out in January, I believe, and it would be the Truth-O-Meter. How's that going to work?
Well, we, PolitiFact, in addition to the Truth-O-Meter, where we place ratings, either true or half true or false, on claims made by politicians, we also track promises politicians make, promises as they are candidates running for office.
It would essentially be
a promise meter, and it would focus on Gavin Newsom, now governor-elect Gavin Newsom, and the many promises he made running for governor. Topics that we'll likely look at are housing and health care, homelessness, some of these big, huge, messy topics that Gavin Newsom is certainly pledging to improve. We hope to hold them accountable. We'll lay out an article about the specific promises we're going to track. And then through time, we will publish updates and reports as to whether those promises are being kept, whether they've been broken, whether they've stalled, and hopefully offer our audience a look at some accountability.
No, that's great. And so that'll be a dynamic promise meter that people will want to come back and revisit from time to time to see how many promises are being kept.
Exactly.
So, all right. Our PolitiFact reporter here at Cap Radio, Chris Nichols, on several topics. Thank you so much for joining us this morning.
Thank you, Randall.
And you are listening to Insight here on Cap Radio.